So I should probably warn you in advance that you aren't going to like our second scripture reading this morning. You shouldn't. I would be alarmed and concerned if you did. It is a horrifying story of violence that does not reflect well on the people of God, and most of the actions in this story cannot be redeemed or excused. But whether or not we like this story, it is a part of our Bible, a story that has been considered important enough to pass down for 3,000 years. Every story has dark chapters: war, slavery, human rights violations, injustice, suffering, regret. It isn't always easy to talk about these dark chapters, but we can't pretend that they didn't happen. Because if we pretend that they didn't happen, we can't learn from them or right the wrongs that have been done. We would like to think that we are descended from heroes, but the truth of the matter is that we are descended from humans, imperfect, mistake-making humans. With that disclaimer in place, our second reading this morning comes to us from the second book of Samuel, chapter 21, verses 1 through 14. Hear now the word of the Lord. Now there was a famine in the days of David for 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord. The Lord said, "There is blood guilt on Saul and on his house, because he put the Gibeonites to death." So the king called the Gibeonites and spoke to them. Now the Gibeonites were not of the people of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. Although the people of Israel had sworn to spare them, Saul had tried to wipe them out in his zeal for the people of Israel and Judah. David said to the Gibeonites, "What shall I do for you? How shall I make expiation that you may bless the heritage of the Lord?" The Gibeonites said to him, "It is not a matter of silver or gold between us and Saul or his house, neither is it for us to put anyone to death in Israel." David said, "What do you say that I should do for you?" They said to the king, "The man who consumed us and planned to destroy us, so that we should have no place in all the territory of Israel, let 7 of his sons be handed over to us, and we will impale them before the Lord at Gibeon on the mount of the Lord." The king said, "I will hand them over." But the king spared Mephibosheth, the son of Saul's son Jonathan, because of the oath of the Lord that was between them, between David and Jonathan, son of Saul. The king took the 2 sons of Rizpah, daughter of Aiah, whom she bore to Saul, and the 5 sons of Merab, daughter of Saul. He gave them into the hands of the Gibeonites, and they impaled them on the mountain before the Lord. The 7 of them perished together. They were put to death in the first days of the harvest, at the beginning of the barley festival. Then Rizpah, the daughter of Aiah, took sackcloth and spread it on a rock for herself, from the beginning of harvest until rain fell on them from the heavens. She did not allow the birds of the air to come on the bodies by day, or the wild animals by night. When David was told what Rizpah, daughter of Aiah, the concubine of Saul, had done, David went and took the bones of Saul and the bones of his son Jonathan from the people of Jabesh-Gilead, who had stolen them on the day the Philistines killed Saul and Gilboa. He brought up from there the bones of Saul and the bones of his son Jonathan, and they gathered the bones of those who had been impaled. They buried the bones of Saul and of his son Jonathan in the land of Benjamin in Zelah, in the tomb of his father Kish. They did all that the king commanded. After that, God heeded supplications for the land. This is the word of the Lord. David was not born a king, but a shepherd. Over time, he became the son-in-law of King Saul, and after all four of Saul's legitimate sons died, David became the king. But David inherited some problems along with the throne, as every ruler does. The nation of Israel had been at peace with the people of Gibeon, but Saul had tried to eradicate them, which obviously caused some bad blood. So now there is a famine that has been going on for 3 years, and David reaches out to God to ask if there's anything that can be done. God reminds David that the Gibeonites have not been treated justly. Now David reaches out to them and asks what he can do to make things right between Israel and Gibeon. They ask him for 7 descendants of King Saul, since Saul himself is dead. They can't kill Saul, so instead they want to kill 7 of his descendants. The word for the number 7 in Hebrew is really similar to the word for vow, so there may be some symbolism in their demand for 7 deaths to avenge a broken vow. This story would have been a lot easier to read if David had put up any kind of protest. Lynching 7 men for the crimes of their father and grandfather is not justice and will not create peace. But David doesn't offer any alternatives or make any effort towards forging a better relationship between their people. He simply says, "I will hand them over." David had loved Jonathan, one of Saul's legitimate sons. So David does not give over Jonathan's son to be killed. Instead, David chooses the sons of Rizpah, one of Saul's concubines, and the sons of Merab, one of Saul's daughters. How could he have done this? David is hailed as a great king, a great hero, a great military leader, a great musician, a great man, beloved of God. And yet, he sent 7 men to be horribly executed, men who were the half-brothers of Jonathan, his best friend, whom he had loved, men who were his nephews by marriage. But David knew that he himself was not from a royal bloodline. He was born a shepherd. Maybe he thought that by letting these 7 men be killed, there would be 7 fewer heirs who might try to claim his throne. Whatever his reasons, David simply says, "I will hand them over." 7 men are horribly killed, and 2 women are left without sons to provide for them. But Rizpah is not so flippant about the value of the lives of these men. She stays with the bodies of her sons for months, chasing off birds and animals. She sleeps on a rock for months, unwilling to let her sons be abandoned again after David abandoned them to their fate. From harvest time until the rain is 6 months. And for all of those 6 months, she protects the bodies of her sons. We don't know her words or thoughts, But Rizpah's actions speak for themselves. She will not let these seven men be forgotten. She will not let this atrocity be brushed off as unfortunate, but just the way things are. She will not let King David rest comfortably with these deaths on his conscience. 6 months is a long time to protest, an eternity to protest alone. It would have been easy to lose hope that anything would be done, but she stood her ground and stayed with the bodies of her sons for 6 months. And eventually, this one-woman protest was noticed by the king himself, and finally, something changed. David had the bodies brought home for burial, along with the bodies of King Saul and his son Jonathan, who had been killed in battle. David and Saul had not always gotten along, to put it mildly, but David had loved Jonathan, and the idea of leaving their bones with thieves instead of burying them in a family plot would have been deeply offensive. David has let himself become so immune to death and to the suffering of others that he has not only willingly given over seven men to be killed, but has brushed off the need to pay final respects to his own best friend. The sons of Rizpah and Merab cannot be brought back from the dead, and neither can the countless Gibeonites whom Saul had killed. Proper burials can only go so far in righting wrongs. But Rizpah has single-handedly shamed David into remembering to value the lives and humanity of the people around him, the people whom he now rules over. We would like to think that the actions of this story are ancient and barbaric, something that would never happen today. But Rizpah is the mother of Emmett Till. Rizpah is the mother of Matthew Shepard. Rizpah is the mothers of the disappeared who demanded justice. Rizpah is every protester who calls our attention to the violent and barbaric truths of our own modern society. Absolutely nothing about this story is comfortable. It is horrific from beginning to end. But it is a powerful reminder that even a single voice can make a difference. It can feel hopeless to speak up for what is right when no one seems to be listening, but Rizpah is proof that the fierce testimony of a single woman can force even a king to pay attention and do what is right. The story takes place early in David's reign as king, and I hope that the lesson he learned from Rizpah stayed with him until his own death. I think that it must have, because God clearly echoed Rizpah's call for justice and mercy. It is only at the end of the story, after David has buried nine men, after he has acknowledged their humanity and given value to the suffering of their mothers, that God is willing to speak with David again or hear his prayers. It is only then that the famine ends.